Welcome to Man Reads Monday. I am Aaron Ventura. He is Jacob Rush. Let's get to work. Jacob, what are we working through today?
Today, we're picking back up in Roy Groves' Durable Trades, Family-Centered Economies That Have Stood the Test of Time.
That was in your best radio voice.
Yeah, right? I tried. Yeah.
And we are in what trades? What numbers?
We are in, I got confused by the chapter titles again. I was going to say 12 through, 16, but it's actually 11 through 15.
Yeah, so we're trades 11 to 15, and then next time 16 to 20, and then we're going to just do a final kind of honorable mentions episode. So 20 get like the full treatment with the little profile of someone who's in the trade, and those are the ones that are kind of
top
the most
durable trades.
Yeah, these are the top ones. And so today we've got some really interesting I enjoyed looking at these. So the first one is Tudor. So let me just read the ones we're going to cover. We're going to cover the Tudor, the Mason, the Silversmith, the Interpreter, and the Author. And so now we're kind of getting into some of the, I don't know if you call them soft skills, but so this is not necessarily like food, fiber, shelter stuff, except for, I suppose, the Mason.
Yeah.
Jewelry or silversmithing is more of a luxury item almost.
Right.
But we're talking about stuff with working with the mind. So tutor, this is another name would be a coach or an instructor, or my favorite, which I meet all the time, are I'm a consultant. Right? Independent contractors, consultants.
I'm a think tank.
Yeah. And
big brain.
So what did you think of the tutor? Did this surprise you that this we're talking about like woodworking and carpentry and then tutor. This surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, it did. And I think some of the maybe confusion or question mark has to do with what exactly is meant. So he's got his little, private instructor or coach.
Yeah.
So I hear tutor and I think educator, teacher.
Yep.
But I think he's presenting it as a little bit distinct from just like your school teacher or anything.
Yeah.
This is somebody who deals with specialized knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who, you think in ancient days is like advisor to the king, right?
Yeah.
Or the literal tutor who's teaching a royal son and instructing him until he comes of age. And then obviously he gives the examples of life coach or business coach. So it's a little bit of a different angle than just, what do you do? I teach for a living. So, and you're right. It is strange because it's not immediately, doesn't immediately have to do with those primary resources. It's almost, the quaternary level. I don't know if he would categorize it that way, but
yeah. So I guess it actually depends. So the one of the examples he talks about here, he says, some operators on page 115, some operators have taken this a step further to provide year-round programming, offering training on unique skill sets that are hard to find in formal institutions. So he's referring to, crafts, hobbies, language, home garden, health, fitness. And then he says, North House Folk School in northern Minnesota provides workshops on traditional crafts. Courses include blacksmithing, timber framing, boat building, wood-fired baking, fiber arts, carving, and outdoor skills. So it actually could, in a certain sense, be someone who is teaching how to be some of these other trades, right?
Yeah.
So this is almost like describing a certain kind of trade school.
Mm-hmm.
And I Googled this place. It's a little woke, but they have a session. I think it's like about $500. Where you learn how to build a cabin after the model of Thoreau's cabin, and you'll learn to do that, which is pretty cool. There's one that's like timber framing, and then you could actually take home the timber frame yourself that you built, and then you can set it up on your property.
Yep, reminds me a little bit of the recent, especially during COVID, masterclass phenomenon.
Yeah,
right, where you pay the subscription and then you can watch Gordon Ramsay teach you cooking, or what's his name, the guy who does the barbecue, Franklin Barbecue.
I don't remember.
Anyway, barbecue or acting or writing. So it's sort of that idea. It's a specialized knowledge, but it's can either be about these primary things or something secondary.
Yeah, I actually wrote down the same thing with masterclass. Is a kind of masterclass, and even YouTube.
Yeah,
YouTube think about
guru.
If you are a say like a personal trainer for a number of clients at a gym. And then COVID happens, your gym shuts down, and you decide, oh, I'm going to just like have my own YouTube channel. And so I think in like classic tutoring that we think, it tends to be like one-on-one or a much smaller group. And that would set you off from like a public school teacher who is teaching to more broadly. Mm-hmm. Then I think with MasterClass or YouTube, some of those things tends to be kind of a mixture of both. And also another possible way of making income that way. And he actually mentions like income can be pretty high here depending on your field of knowledge. So if you are a teacher or you're successful in a certain trade, in perhaps even in your like legacy years, we're bringing back the Dave Ramsey language, but you know, you want to retire. Well, what if you still have a passion for what you're doing? Often what you would do is you'd become a consultant or a tutor. You're helping train other guys, and you can make very good money doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this trade?
No, there was something I thought about. He talks about the family centeredness, which is interesting, right? So it's got a pretty low score when it comes to that. And I think it's because there's a, you know, you have opportunity. What are your kids going to do? Are they going to sit in with you on the lessons?
Right.
Right. And he actually mentions that there's no tangible assets for future generations, which, you know, you can maybe get into an argument with him about how knowledge is the most tangible, you know, even if the most intangible tangible asset you could have. But his point is to say, well, it's not like, you know, unless you've got a Taekwondo school or something, or you teach your kids Taekwondo, and then
there's no insurable property,
correct,
that you can hand down,
right? You know, it's, your kid has to be good at Taekwondo if he's going to take over the Taekwondo school.
So, yeah. Right.
Anyway, that's it.
One of the other things I thought about was, and we interviewed C.R. Wiley. I forget if it was then or another time where he mentioned that his wife teaches piano lessons. Actually, I think it's in Man of the House.
Mm.
And so being like a piano teacher, when you have your students coming into your home, that's actually a really great kind of either side hustle if you're, say, a homemaker or mother that wants to has a passion for music.
Right.
My sister-in-law, she does this. So she teaches piano to a bunch of students, and that's just another kind of little side thing that she's able to do while she's going through school. And so there's certain ways in which this is kind of a trade that you could do on the side, depending on what your line of work is.
Yeah.
All right, up next, we got the mason, which is also kind of the bricklayer, the paver, or the stone mason. What did you think of this one?
This one was interesting, especially because he mentioned that there really hasn't been much change in the art over generations. He talked about, you know, maybe it's more efficient. And I mean, I have to imagine that the bonding agents, but four bricks has gotten stronger, right? You know what I mean?
You'd like to think that.
You'd like to think that we're building stronger buildings these days.
Yeah.
But I thought that was fascinating how he talked about, you know, people have been doing this. The historical stability of a mason is 96%.
Yeah.
And he uses Tower of Babel as their example. Quotes Genesis, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. So man has been doing for a while.
Yeah, and everyone needs it. And one of the cool things about this is that there's a really low supply. He mentions for every masonry business, there are 7 carpentry outfits. If I were just asking myself, do I know any masons? I don't. Do I know any carpenters? I know a ton.
Yeah.
And so if you're like the painter, which also was, we found out, in high demand but low supply, this is something that has relatively low barriers to entry. You want to apprentice someone for a few years before you go into business for yourself, which is kind of a normal pattern in a lot of these. So if you're like a 22-year-old or 18-year-old thinking about you want to be a mason, you're probably not going to want to just start your own business yet. You want it to be good at it first. And he says that the average wage is around $22 an hour, but self-employed masons can earn double or triple that. So this is something where like, one of the things I like about this book is it's just giving you new possibilities. So, you know, you ask the kids, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they typically, you know, I want to be a firefighter
astronaut
or something like that. But it tends to be things that they know about from like pop culture or movies. It's the things that get glorified as virtuous or courageous or brave.
Right.
I want to be a soldier. I want to be in the army. But there's a ton of trades in here that could be extremely rewarding that you would be really skilled at,
right,
that you really don't even think about. And I think a stonemason is one of those. Yeah, this is laborious work, but this sounds like really rewarding and really cool work if you're into this.
I did have a question about, you know, he talks about laying a brick hearth or paving a walkway, hewing, setting a stone wall. Is concrete or foundation work the same as masonry, right? So, if you know, because paving a sidewalk or a walkway, you've sometimes got the pavers and you've got an intricate thing. But like, what about just concrete business in general?
Yeah.
Is that the same thing?
So I don't know that they would. I think if you were a mason, I suppose you could also have the ability to do it, but I would see them as pretty distinct things.
Yeah,
because it is a different skill to lay bricks and measure than it is to, you know, bring the concrete truck in and they're just pouring the slab,
raking
but
it.
But there are people. I mean, there's a family in our church who does this, and a number of people use it. But I don't think they do. I don't think they like lay bricks. I think what they do is concrete.
Yeah.
Who knows? I think it may be distinct, but someone who does know can correct us.
Checks out.
All right. Well, from that kind of stone to a different kind of stone.
A precious stone. A
precious stone. The silversmith, the goldsmith. We're talking about the jeweler.
Mm. I do love, it's fun, his little quotes, and some of them are scripture.
Yeah.
So he's got Exodus 28, as a jeweler engraves signets, so shall you, shall you engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel, you shall enclose them in settings of gold filigree. Yeah, so a jeweler, a goldsmith. You think about a jewelry shop.
Yep.
You know, you go in, there's Gem State Diamonds or whatever just right down the street. They sell gold, silver, jewelries? What's the plural? Jewelry?
Yeah, it's just jewelry.
Interesting. Anyway, so you think about it on one end, is this different than a craftsman, right? Somebody who's a blacksmith or working with the raw metals?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this the industry kind of right above that or on top of that?
Yeah, so the way that I understand his description here is this is the person, kind of like the distinction between woodworker and carpenter, where they're creating the final product.
Okay.
So you're working with the raw materials, and maybe you find it advantageous if you have that ability. I doubt that a jeweler also has a mine, right? Because those are very different
workers. Or a forge.
Yeah, to be a miner or to do the kind of work that it takes to get it down to the quality that you need. So like jewelry quality, or if you're purchasing diamonds or purchasing gems.
Yeah.
I highly doubt that you are going to be able to do both of those things well.
Yeah.
So the jeweler, I think, that he's describing is making that final product, taking the ring and forming it or shaping it or adding the setting to it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I liked about this one that kind of surprised me actually is that this is actually one of the lowest barriers to entry to do this. And you think about it, oh yeah, that makes sense because I made candy jewelry when I was a kid. You know, jewelry that you can eat. I think that's good. We need more of that kind of jewelry.
Well, like think about the Christmas ornaments, right? You take a candy cane and you put a little metal hook on it.
Yeah.
Right? You can put that in your ear and you've got jewelry. Boom.
Yeah. And if you're like a little girl doing arts and crafts, you got the bead set from Joann Fabrics or whatever. And that you go get
a little leather bracelet. Yeah.
So it doesn't have to even be precious metals.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be, you know, you got the microscope and you're looking real closely at how to form it. It could be as simple as you take fabric and make little, I don't know, whatever girls wear, you know.
Earrings?
Earrings or bracelets.
About ladies in our community, like Bess Blakey, who does her gold, it's typically gold jewelry. Lenora using the leather things. It's profitable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And one of the things that I realized as I was thinking about this, so what you need if you're going to do this to be successful is you need to be pretty creative. you need to be pretty skillful, and you need to be able to have some kind of like niche market for for what you do, because the barriers to entry are so low.
Yeah,
there's tons of people that are doing this, and so you have to really, he says, you know, you have to really stand out. Mm-hmm. But as I was thinking about this, so Sean, who's I think probably just outside the door, he got his wife a ring from Etsy that's really cool. It's like this kind of like, it looks all rustic, like like it's a dragon stone or something like that. And so these two pieces that fit together, like I've never seen any ring like it. Mm. And you wouldn't really be able to find this in your standard, you know, Fred Meyer jewelry or whatever the places are in the mall. But on Etsy, he got his on Etsy. And then like my wedding ring that I'm wearing right now, this is just a basic gold band, but I got this on Etsy. And I forget why I did, but I think that was just the actually kind of easiest, cheapest place for getting what I wanted. And I didn't want to have to go in, and I knew my size and all that stuff.
Right.
So a marketplace like Etsy now actually gives you the ability to have a little home shop. Mm. This is one of the things that you could do at home, depending on the technicality of the jewelry. You could even maybe do it with your kids. I don't know. Mm. And then have a marketplace that is even around the world. I mean, I have a picture, a map of Middle Earth, like a big Middle Earth map on my wall that came from like Czech Republic or something like that.
That's rad.
So it's pretty crazy that you can, you know, have even across countries kind of a market now.
Mm.
All right. Up next, we have the interpreter.
1 Corinthians.
So this is a spiritual gift that not all possess.
Yeah, not all speak in tongues, but some interpret. This is essentially a translator.
Yeah.
Right? Interpreter, translator. Think of, you know, every press conference you see, every UN ambassador, you've got somebody off to the side with the closed captions.
Yeah.
And it's in another language. And
got the little headset on.
Yeah, with a little headset on. And we have, you know what we have to thank for this? We have the Tower of Babel to thank
if only the Masons didn't exist, we wouldn't have this other problem of...
It's because of the Masons that the interpreters exist.
Yeah.
And that's the point it kind of makes, is it's historically stable because there are thousands of different languages and even little dialects within major languages which require interpretation.
Yeah, I actually just... This morning, so we support a missionary friend of mine who is in Africa, and she just finished her 1,500 hours of Chadian Arabic, and she like recorded this video of her kind of interviewing her teachers, and so this is like a white girl, like she went to business school in Seattle, good friend of mine, total like white girl, but now she's been in Africa for a number of years, and it's just crazy her speaking this language that she did not speak back when she was here. And that was just the first language she had to learn before she can actually like bring the gospel to this specific tribe.
Yeah.
So she learns that. And then now she has to learn Macanese. I'm like, I didn't even know that was a language. And you think she's giving years of her life to live in a place that does not have running water, right? Like they go to the bathroom in a hole.
Yeah.
And the sacrifices she's making just to bring something to another language as a missionary is really remarkable. And this is one of the places where it would be a huge blessing for technology to help us cross some of these barriers. And yet as much as our, you know, our phones now have a new kind of Apple Translate, Siri Translate thing, that's pretty good. But... As anyone who's actually learned multiple languages or tried to translate, you realize it isn't a mathematical formula.
Mm.
It takes action. It's almost an art. It's kind of like poetry.
Yeah.
So we can't program a computer to write good poetry because it's a human thing.
Yeah.
In a similar way, interpretation has that poetic skill and element to it. You know, if you've ever read about Tyndale's translation. That we have of the Bible. I mean, he was a master of skill in English. And there's been other attempts to translate that are embarrassing and inferior, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're getting at the heart of it is even though we have these advances in technology, language is at the heart of what it means for us to be human.
Yeah.
And when you're translating, you're not simply just going from dictionary to dictionary. You have to understand how words in particular languages and particular contexts have colors.
Yeah.
Right?
Metaphorical.
Exactly. Metaphorical usage, connotations that a computer just can't have, yeah. Which is what makes the interpreter so valuable. And apparently, they can make good money.
Yeah.
Oh, it mentions here, sign language, so interpretation for the deaf. That's a very important skill.
Yeah, and they're needed all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lastly, we have the author. And this is a pretty family-centered in that typically you work from home, except that this is pretty solitary work. So you don't have a bunch of cooks in the kitchen when you're writing normally. Maybe you'll...
What's my next line?
Yeah. So that's unique about this kind of work. If you're a writer, you kind of have to work by yourself. And so you have to have an immense amount of discipline, creativity, and something to write. What do you think about this trade?
The other thing about... So, you know, he makes mention of the historical stability of it. As long as there have been humans who can write, they write.
Yeah.
And our tradition is filled with these texts that have lasted through centuries. Now, the problem is what may be a great text may not have been a great text. What may be a great text now in our reckoning may not have been a hot seller in the presses at the time.
Totally.
Right? And so he mentions the income. It scores much lower on that. And how often do we talk about the stereotype of the guy who's like the author who's trying to catch a break, right? And he's basically just poor and just doing all these sorts of things. I think that would be one note of caution, right? As you're trying to go through, is this a viable sort of income? Probably not something you should be dropping everything in order to pursue, unless somebody's throwing a big fat paycheck at you right away.
Yeah, it's very easy, and you should do this if you want to be a writer. Run the math on what you will actually make. And so he says, on average, people sell less than 250 copies for each book. Okay, so that's not very much. And even if you saw every single dollar that you made, so let's say a book is about $10, for a whole book, you would only have made $2,500 for two, right?
Yeah.
And you think, so either you need to write like a couple books a month that sell at that rate, or you need to sell way more than that. And by the way, you see a fraction of that.
Mm.
You know, you'll be lucky to break even on a lot of these projects. So, and here's the reality. He says at the end, there are more people wanting to earn a living from writing than there are customers willing to buy their books.
Oof.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So the market is totally saturated because now anybody can kind of do self-publishing or print on demand and Kindle books and stuff.
How many like no-name books do you see in an airport? Books, you know, little airport convenience store books that come in and out of print, you know, and no one's going to remember them, and no one really cares.
Yeah.
So it's not stable in the same way that something like masonry, something like woodworking or carpentry is, because it's an intellectual skill, it's an artistic skill, and you have to be very, very good in order for people to actually pay you to do it, and it just will take time for you to get there. It's not to burst anybody's bubble or, kill their dreams. But
actually it is.
Actually, yes. If you, and here's the hard hitting thing. If you're a grown man who's got a family and you're waiting for your big break as an author and you're forcing your family to work, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You big dummy? Stop. Like you're not going to catch a big break.
Yeah.
And especially not if the blessing of God is against you because you're not providing for your family.
Yeah.
So I don't know who that was.
Well,
I don't know who that was aimed at. So cut it out.
Yeah, and I think writing is the kind of thing that you could just chip away at on the side as something you enjoy and want to refine your craft and do. Also, there are a number of occasions. I think of George Herbert, who they didn't become successful until after they died.
Yeah. Nobody found their poetry, right? Or they tried to get rid of it. Yeah. Gerard Manley Hopkin is another one. He tried to burn a lot of his poetry, and then it wasn't until after he died that everyone was like, this guy was great.
Yeah. So often genius goes unrewarded in this life.
Don't quit your day job. I'm trying to remember the name of Wordsmithy. So if you're interested in writing, though, especially of how do you balance maybe your dreams of becoming a writer, Pastor Doug's book, Wordsmithy, would be a great resource.
Yeah.
One of the things he's going to say is you just need to live long enough before you can be a writer.
Yeah, you have to have something to say. You have to have read a lot.
Yeah.
Before. And yeah, Wordsmithy is one of those books that I put on my kind of read once a year.
Yeah.
Just because it's helpful. Not necessarily as just a writer, but as a reader.
Yeah.
It's a really fun book to read.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're getting through this book at a pretty rapid pace. And if you are wanting to know what we're doing after this, so after we finish Durable Trades, we're going to read a book by Joe Rigney, your homeboy, although yeah. I don't know if you can call him. Is he a doctor now?
He's a doctor
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so Dr. Joe Rigney. He just came out with a book called More Than a Battle on, I forget what the subtitle is. Over there, can you grab it? It's in between, yeah.
More Than a Battle, How to Experience Victory, Freedom, and Healing from Lust.
Yeah, so this is, I've never read a Joe Rigney book that I have not liked, and I anticipate this being a good one as well. So if you want to get that, go ahead and order it, because we will be reading that after Durable Trades. Okay, Jacob, what should people do this week?
Well, whatever people do this week, they need to make sure that they get that wisdom, they build that house, they rule that big fat belly, and they stack dollars for the grandkids.
For the grand... berries.
Kids, babies, berries.